Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Republicans approve billions of dollars for capital projects across the state. We explain which were approved and those that received the biggest cuts. Plus, the legislature is one step closer to improving how sexual harassment allegations are reported at the Wisconsin National Guard. And in Washington, D.C., lawmakers approve raising the nation's debt ceiling. We explain the provision in the bill that will have an impact on state agencies. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for June 2nd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Jared, let's first start talking about recapping joint finance because they took some significant action this week, specifically on the capital budget and some other big agencies like tourism. Speaking as a whole, what they approved was $2 billion for the capital budget. And other things that they approved, $20 million for state tourism, but they did reject some things as well that are noteworthy, including funding for UW-Madison Engineer Building and rejected broadband expansion grants. Before we dive more into the details about these topics, let's just take a listen from Democrats and Republicans kind of taking their arguments about the capital budget, with Democrats arguing it's simply not enough, we missed the mark is what they said, and meanwhile, Republicans defended that as saying, well, it's nearly $2.4 billion, and they believe that is worthwhile. Let's take a listen.
All these projects have been sitting on the shelf. So with due respect to Co-Chair Bourne and his concerns about enumerating projects too early, we should have funded engineering 2 years ago. We've already put off UW-Madison several times on these projects. So when a project is ready to go, we shouldn't be killing it just because one particular speaker happens to have a bone to pick with UW-Madison. This is not a historic investment. This is a historic underinvestment in our state's most important resource. Talk is cheap in this building, but not as cheap as the majority party.
But to say that, you know, talk is cheap, I mean, this is almost $2.4 billion. And I realize to a minority party that doesn't actually have to craft a real budget and can play with monopoly money, or a party that loves to tax and spend more than anyone, I know that's the case too. But where I come from, $2.4 billion is a lot of money. So I guess if that's cheap, people are certainly entitled to their opinion. But I would not call this cheap. I would call this an important historic investment for all of Wisconsin.
So what's significant about the UW-Madison Engineer Building funding not being approved by joint finance is because the UW system feels like they're almost in a pinch right now. They're getting roughly around 8,000 applicants to get into that school, but they only have room to accept about 1,200 students. So that means they don't really have space, which is what they want to do, is to build this new, to get hands-on experience, you know, do more training, etc. And with Republicans always making the argument of, we have a worker shortage, we need to keep people here in the state. Well, that was what Democrats were also arguing as well. These kids are going to go elsewhere. They're going to go to school in Minnesota, Iowa, or where else these other engineering schools are. Also want to take a note on broadband expansion grants. We know this has been a thing Governor Tony Evers has, you know, really rallied for since he's been in office and on the campaign trail last year. He's used a lot of federal funding to expand broadband, but Republicans rejected that. And, Jer, there is kind of a reason why they're approving and denying certain projects because of the look ahead next year and how specifically they're going to afford tax cuts down the road.
Well, with broadband specifically, you're hearing a lot of talk about there's federal money available. What you've heard from Republicans the last 3 years, really, because of COVID money, right? Well, with broadband, the Public Service Commission should hear by June 30th how much we're going to get this next round of grants. It's between $700 million and $1.1 billion. Now, the PSC estimates to really fully expand broadband in Wisconsin, it could perhaps cost $1.8 billion, right? The governor wanted to do $750 million in general purpose revenue, state tax dollars, to kind of fill that gap. You could also argue you could use more efficiently, get out there quicker, that kind of stuff. But if you look at the committee's doing, they're trying to save every dollar they can in GPR. Now, that might seem odd at home. We have a surplus of $6.9 billion this fiscal year. We have revenue growth the next 2 years on top of that. Why are you trying to save money? Well, I'll try to make it as simple as possible, but remember, budgets are two-year documents. Republicans are spending a lot of money in the first year of the budget and trying to save money in the second year. So all the one-time funds, because that birth surplus is one-time money for the most part, right? For example, the Building Commission on Thursday, they had a motion with $1.7 billion in one-time cash to pay for building projects with money we have, not in bonding. When you do that, you save long-term debt costs. You don't make these payments every year in those bonds of 20 years. And they're putting it on the first year of the budget. Because what happens is your second year of the budget is your base for future years. So what I think is going to happen with this thing, and when I pick it up from talking to people, is Republicans will spend a lot of money in the first year of the budget. They're going to put all their one-time cash or as much as they can there. The number to watch in the second year is about $2.2 billion. That's the ongoing revenue we kind of have to spend. That is your money for a tax cut, for Medicaid, and for schools. Now, schools, those are the red line for Tony Evers. You have to fund schools the way that he's happy with it, so it's on the budget. Medicaid, you have to do. You know, we can't like just not fund Medicaid. They are rejecting Evers' proposal to expand the program through the Affordable Care Act and get all this federal money to pay for it. We have to come with state dollars to do that. And tax cuts are Republican red line, right? They have to have tax cuts. So that $2.2 billion is your cap, because if you go above it, which you can, you don't have to stay below it. If you go above that, you create an issue in future years. For 25, 27, you have to have revenue growth, more revenue growth, to make up that money to meet your spending commitments. By keeping under that cap, it's more palatable in the future years, and it sets up future legislatures to have more money to spend on tax cuts and other things. So what I'm really watching here is, I mean, just look, we have this huge surplus. The tech colleges got $7 million in general purpose revenue. It's not a lot of money, right, for an increase. UW, or their GPR budget, another week and a half, they're not getting much, if anything, maybe even a cut the way things are going at this point. Again, trying to save GPR to set up that second year to pay for those priorities and then keep us in good shape long term for what we do in the out years.
And we've talked about this too. They're just trying to be careful. They're being, you know, mindful too of that surplus, because who knows what's going to happen. Not saying we're going to have another pandemic. Maybe we go into recession, but that is why. Another reason why they're kind of being a little bit cautious of how much they are spending. Another headline that came out of Joint Finance this week is something we've talked on the show before. They did approve $2 million to help Green Bay host the NFL draft in 2025. This was part of the pot of $2 million dedicated to the state tourism department. There would be $2 million that would go directly to Green Bay, their tourism hub, to put this on. Now, the cost can cover a wide variety of things, according to Senator Coles, who was one of the Green Bay area lawmakers who filed this motion to Joint Finance to get this through. The Department of Tourism would secure those dollars, like I said, and part of that $20 million. And this was something that both Republicans kind of, I should say, the Republican co-chairs touted as this gives them flexibility to use this money as kind of whatever they would like. It could cover, you know, parking costs, it could cover police, a wide variety of things. So that was kind of Republicans' reasoning of putting that pot of money there. Now, Democrats, they voted against the tourism budget as a whole, not because of what the money would be spent on. It's because they wanted to see more money invested to make Wisconsin more competitive and to bring even more larger events. Representative Evan Goyke, a Democrat from Milwaukee, argued that, yes, it's great we have the RNC coming in 2024. It's great that we're having the NFL draft in 2025, but there are many other competitions and things out there that they want more tourism dollars to broadcast all that Wisconsin has to offer. So let's take a listen from Republicans and Democrats on this issue.
Tourism is big business in Wisconsin. My district borders comes close to the Wisconsin Dells area. It's an incredible economic driver. We are investing an additional $20 million in a continuing appropriation to the department, and it'll help the department attract visitors to our state. We're also giving the department a lot of flexibility with how they can spend that money. Additionally, in tourism, we are creating an opportunity and attraction fund. It's $10 million, and that's designed to attract major events to the state of Wisconsin.
I want to make sure that we don't leave the debate of tourism today only thinking that there's one event, the NFL draft in 2025, or that we reserve these dollars only for sporting events like that. There are so many events, competitions, conventions, and they're out there. They're going places. We need to equip the Department of Tourism with the staff and the resources, the position authority and the budget to go get them, to recruit them. And that includes big, huge events like the Ryder Cup or the RNC or the NFL Draft. It also includes small events.
In addition to Green Bay getting some money, we also saw Milwaukee get about $10 million, or I should say, excuse me, not about, $10 million in tourism dollars to, you know, host a wide variety of events. We know the RNC is coming there. We know they have a presidential debate in August of this year. But again, important to note, JR, that they're getting this funding when some of these events, like the draft, is not until 2025. So it's almost like Green Bay and Milwaukee have to hold on to this money until they need to use it for RNC and other things.
They're front-loading the budget again. So draft April of 2025, the grant is in 2023-24. So remember, the budget goes July 1st of 23 to June 30th of 25. So that first fiscal year, that's the money's coming in. The RNC, now you could argue the Milwaukee will have expenses ahead of the August convention. There's going to be an RNC meeting in August, a debate, that kind of thing. But the real expenses are in the next fiscal year after this one. They're front-loading the budget again to free up that money down the road.
All right. Also this week, there was a committee hearing, I should say a public hearing, on a package of bills that would update procedures of how sexual assault and harassment are handled at the Wisconsin National Guard. Now, there is a story behind this, because this is, in a sense of what I heard from Republicans and Democrats, this is a long time coming. This all stems from a federal investigation that found back in 2019 that the Guard was mishandling more than a two dozen cases against sexual assault, that they were misinvestigated and they weren't properly holding those accountable. So what this package would do, in a sense, would require annual reports to be sent to the governor to detail the number of sexual misconduct cases. It would also adopt military codes of conduct to align with Wisconsin's code of conduct as well, to hold more individuals accountable. Basically, it's clarifying consent laws in this, and also it details that consent is not a viable argument before court. So talking to Republicans and Democrats about this, you know, this was bipartisan. It wasn't a vote during the committee hearing, but they believe it is just a step in the right direction. You know, by no means is this going to stop sexual harassment in the Wisconsin National Guard or the U.S. military as a whole, but they believe it will hopefully start streamlining the process, clean up of how these are tracked and reported in the future. What we're going to play to this video, though, is from Representative Shane Sortwell, who argued about the bill-specific language, which in the bill, which was authored by Representative Tony Kurtz, it removes the word gentleman in it and kind of, you know, to update with times, right? His argument was questioning about why that is happening, and then we're going to hear from Tony Kurtz about his response on why that was. Let's take a listen.
Maybe it seems more nuanced, but I actually think it's a really big deal looking at historically what the military and officers in particular are what about. So in twice we're striking out the line gentleman and just saying officer. And I understand I presume the idea of this is because obviously we now have ladies that are in the armed forces as well. And when you're in difficult times in war zones, the bloodlust can get up and you're getting riled up, and it's the duty of an officer and a gentleman to restrain that and make sure that everybody is behaving under the proper rules of war. And that's where the idea of the gentleman comes in, and I wonder if you could address that, if you were open to, you know, rather than striking that out, simply expanding it to include, you know, some of our modern changes, but not throwing away what we've had for over 1,000 years.
I personally believe the way it is written, unbecoming an officer, period. I think that says it all. I understand your point, especially when you talk historical terms, but we are talking the modern military, where women, along with men, are in combat roles and are, in my humble opinion, exceeding in those roles. Mm-hmm. So I don't think taking the word gentleman out still takes anything away from the duty and the honor in the integrity that an officer, he or she, shows on the battlefield.
These bills were also introduced as sexual misconduct in the U.S. military has been a problem for years. So, yes, Wisconsin had an issue, which led to then, you know, the major general who had to step down by Governor Tony Evers' request. This was back around 2019, like I said. But this also comes as, you know, they're trying to bring awareness to the issue, but it's also at the same time they're struggling to recruit. So a lot going on. You know, don't really know for sure if the governor will sign these bills, but at least, you know, talking to many members on this committee and who were in a study committee who formed these bills last summer, it seems like they would get bipartisan support on the floor.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Right. All right, let's move on to Republicans, I guess, are not giving up on trying to amend abortion laws. But this one that was introduced, or I should say a package that were introduced this week, kind of goes the other direction than what Assembly Speaker Robin Voss introduced with Senator Felskowski, which would add exceptions for rape and incest to the 1849 criminal abortion ban. These bills would kind of alter that ban. They were proposed by Senator Romaine Quinn, Representative McVicie, and Donna Rosar, and they would exempt the pregnancy complications under the current ban. So it would remove that. So right now, if a woman you know, has complications during a pregnancy, or you know, her life is in danger, right now under law, she can go see a doctor. But many doctors, even right now, don't feel comfortable doing that because of the confusing language in the law. These bills would also allow individuals to claim an unborn child as a dependent when filing taxes. It would also fund pregnancy resource centers with a dedicated grant of $1 million per year. So Voss, his reaction to these bills, were saying, you know, they have merit, but what I'm hearing is that we should be adding exceptions. Bigger picture of why we're bringing this up, JR, is that we've talked before, abortion is still going to be a problem for Republicans if they don't find a way to address it in future elections.
Yeah, this is kind of a throw the wall, see what sticks kind of approach, right? So they're trying to soften the image a little bit with these complications by creating these exceptions for it. The problem for Republicans is, one, the public is not where they are, and two, the base doesn't want to see changes. There was a story in Politico this week talking about what happened in Wisconsin in the Supreme Court race. And the reporter went to a protest, an anti-abortion protest, and a couple people there basically said, we don't care about the short-term political implications, we care about the long-term issue of banning abortion, period. If your base isn't there, you're navigating a very difficult issue. They don't care about the political stuff, and there are members of the legislature who don't care about that either. They're not worried about losing elections. To them, it's a moral issue. And that is a challenge for Republicans because they don't have a consensus on advancing anything that addresses this moral issue for their core constituencies.
And worth noting, too, Democrats, I believe on the same day or the next day, introduced their own Pregnancy Protection Act. These are many things that they fighted before, kind of to give more pre and post prenatal care. It would also address, you know, complications when a woman is pregnant, and more maternity care, and make it essential for insurance companies. Now let's move on from Wisconsin to D.C. Mm-hmm. because they were a lot on the news this week. I'm sure many people know that on Thursday, finally work is done, that they passed a massive bill to continue to raise the debt ceiling. Now, we had a lot of mixed votes, though, and that's kind of why I want to bring this up, because we had some Democrats voting for and some Democrats voting against. Specifically, like you see here on your screen, these are all of our, you know, congressional delegation. What was kind of the sticking point for Pocan and Moore voting against this was the work requirements in the bill, because it would raise the age limit. Now, there are work requirements here in Wisconsin and on the national level for people that receive food stamps. The argument that it could make it even harder and more difficult for people to find work if they do lose those benefits. We also had Senator Ron Johnson, who has been, you know, kind of always advocating to stop federal spending, so he voted against it. No real surprise there.
So part of the dynamic is who's the majority in each house. In the House of Representatives, Republicans have the majority. Most Republicans are kind of part of the more of the establishment. They're not really Freedom Caucus members for the most part. They're voting with leadership. Brian Stile is actually part of leadership. Mike Gallagher has his chairmanship of this, you know, special committee on China. They're part of the establishment wing of the party. Tom Tiffany is voting no because he is kind of more from that Freedom Caucus type perspective, right? Also considering a run for U.S. Senate and kind of part of more of that Trump populist wing of the party. That explains that. In the Senate, Baldwin is part of the majority party, right? So she's going to vote for it because it's kind of incumbent upon those majority parties to advance the bill. Interesting in the House that there were more Dem votes and Republican votes overall.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after they reached that deal, wasn't much of a shock. It got done. The question was, these amendments in the Senate slow things down. Turns out they wanted to get home for the weekend. They got through really quickly last night and out the door on Friday.
Right. Also, the continued challenge for Kevin McCarthy and to kind of not control, but unite mm-hmm. Republicans in his House, because many of them were threatening to vote against it. There was this possibly, do they have the votes, et cetera. It's always these dramatic, you know, headlines that we see, but at least they got it done is a simple point. All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising this week, we're going to talk about WEC's meeting on yesterday, specifically about a candidate called Paul Melotic.
Yeah, so every election cycle, it is basically standard practice for the four caucuses to look at the nomination papers of the opposing candidates and try and find problems, whether they're real or perceived, right? So you go through and see if everything filled out properly. With Paul's nomination papers, there seemed to be a faulty printer at play. So you print out these documents, and they have like a header across that says, like, you know, special election, general election, has information about your party. Then you have people sign, right? If you look at his page really closely, the printer was probably running out of ink or photocopier because they were like just those faded sections you get, you know, from a bad inkjet. Anyway, it was missing information. So the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee challenged the paper, saying these things are not filled out properly. You should boot them off the ballot. Election Commission staff said, look, these were not material problems. They're not serious enough to kick him off the ballot. Commission agreed. Now that he's cleared that hurdle, really strong position to win this seat. It's like an upper 50% Republican seat. Yes, you have abortion as a driving issue right now in campaigns. But you don't have anything besides this to drive the campaign. You don't have like the Supreme Court race in the spring with the 8th Senate district that could. That was a mid-50s Republican district. Dan Kinnell won by 50.8%, but you had a huge emphasis and a huge amount of money spent.
A lot of money, yeah.
I don't see the liberal coalition coming together for like a big run at a 57, 58% Republican seat.
And it's not like a lot is on the line like when it was in the Senate where they could hold on to their supermajority. This vote, I mean, this election, the special election, is not going to make or break the majority by Republicans in the Assembly.
At best, you get more breathing room on veto override votes in the Assembly, but that's about the best you're going to get. So I don't expect a whole lot of action there. It's going to be a July 18th special election. Not a time a lot of people turn out. I mean, there's always a chance, you know, if you get a big surge of enthusiasm, but he's in a really strong position now to win that seat.
All right, let's get to Mix this week. And wouldn't be a show if we didn't mention shared revenue. And the timeline is key here, JR.
Yeah, let's just talk timing first. So as of this morning, I checked the legislature's website. There was no executive session scheduled in the Senate committee with that bill. Okay, so let's do the timeline. Finance wants to be done June 15th. That is less than 2 weeks away. They're going to meet once next week on Thursday the 8th. If you don't move the shared revenue bill next week through at least one house, the following week you could have a marathon session finance on Tuesday, floor sessions on Wednesday, and then another marathon session on Thursday to finish the budget. That's if you finish it on time. This is starting to really kind of push the envelope for when they can get done, right? They don't have to be done June 15th in finance. They can push it back. But look at the timeline, big picture. It takes about a week to draft the budget bill after finance finishes. So if they finish on the 15th, you have that week after Father's Day to draft the bill. Everybody takes a breather. The both houses go on the floor the last week of June. They pass it before the fiscal year ends. It's on Evers' desk. He signs it early July. They all go home for the summer, right? If shared revenue is not done, you can't finish off that budget. So now we're threatening that timeline, unless there is a deal struck. Now, Republicans caucus in the Senate this week. What I'm picking up is, okay, we talked about before, you have your Steve Noss from Whitewater and Chris Kapania from Delafield. They're both pretty much no's, right? Mm-hmm. Three Milwaukee area Republicans, Dan Canodal of Germantown, Rob Hutton, and Julian Bradley of Franklin. We kind of assume they're going to have some issues with it, right? Because that's a big in their backyard kind of thing. I'm picking up more questions from outstate Republicans of like, okay, I'm not sure I like this bill. They're turning it the bailout for Milwaukee, even though backers argue you're giving Milwaukee the tools to fix it.
A lot of people have a problem with the word bailout. Mm-hmm.
So Milwaukee has to approve the sales tax hike. We're not giving state money they're getting low, but it's still in their minds a bailout. And the argument from those is like, look, you're getting all this money for your communities and your district through shared revenue. Why is this a problem? Well, it's not enough. They don't like the optics of it. They don't like the procedure. So there's all kinds of angst now. So that five possible no's has grown. Okay.
Now
in the
what?
The Senate caucus. Now, we're just in the talking stage. You can always bring people home. Stuff can happen. But if you don't bring them home, what do you do? Do you get, like, Democratic votes? That's a whole other can of worms.
Right.
So what to watch next week? Do we see Devin Lemieux, Senate Majority Leader, Robin Vossian, the Speaker, and Governor Evers sit down and talk about this? Can they re- I know Robin says he's done negotiating.
Evers said he wanted to meet with at least Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux this week. Not sure if that actually happened, but he did say that on Tuesday.
Do Devin and Tony strike a deal and then get that to the Senate and then try and force the assemblies? I mean, there's all kinds of dynamics.
Right.
But the pressure is building about how you get this budget done on time with shared revenue settled, the timeline we talked about.
All right. And falling this week is UW-Madison. Going back to the fact that we kind of started the show, it's not only just the engineer building, but UW system as a whole saw kind of the most cuts with capital projects. And that could likely maybe do with Assembly Speaker Robin Vossian, his dislike with many things there.
So Governor Evers proposed $3.8 billion in capital projects. Of that, $1.8 billion was for the UW system. The Finance Committee approved $953 million for the system. Go back a little deeper, though. On the Madison campus, they approved one thing, a new practice facility for the football team, the Badgers. That's it. And then, you know, that's here. There's not a single academic project on the campus that's been approved in the next 2 years. Engineering building is the most perplexing one. So Republicans have called for years, we want the system to produce more qualified job applicants, right? We want more people in this high-tech economy. We want you to be geared toward the economy, not toward, you know, poli-sci and humanities.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Here's a chance to have 1,000 more undergrad engineering students, 500 more graduate engineering students, and they said no. Now, Robin Voss has made clear, he's unhappy with the university about diversity, equity, inclusion. People I talk to get the idea of trying to, like, nix a little bit of funding over DEI. Okay? That's a political thing. This is an economic thing. This is not about, like, this is about sending a message, really. Like, basically, we're done. Like, I'm done with what's going on. Robin Voss wasn't happy about the new chancellor appointed last spring, called on the system to reconsider the appointment that she was not to his liking politically. He's unhappy about DEI. Remember, he's been on a, kind of like a tear for about a decade about free speech on campus.
Yep.
All these things are going on, and now you have Robin Voss, who, you know, look, he's on the Finance Committee, but he runs the Assembly show.
Right.
His fingerprints are all over this. And it looks like a punishment for Madison and the system for not heeding what he wants. Now, the question is, can you bring it back somehow? The engineering building, can it be, you know, we have wrap-up
motions.
Well,
they have plans to tear it down, and we'll see about that. That's
we have wrap-up motions with finance. You can slip things back in. Does this get the university's attention, right? Also, don't forget, I mentioned before, the tech colleges got $7 million in general purpose revenue. Republicans love the tech college system. They've been kind of like at angst with the system for years. What's that mean for the GPR budget for UW when it comes up in a week and a half? I mean, getting flat would be almost a miracle right now. They might be talking about a cut.
Oof.
Granted, they're getting to raise tuition, about $38 million a year, so there's some money, but this is a message that's been sent and sent in a very, very unpleasant way. How's that?
All right. That will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.